Welcome to Positive Personal Power with hope, aspiration, and encouragement. Our goal is to build and enhance people's confidence and strength to handle life's challenges. Now, let me introduce you to your host, Nathaniel Schooler.
It's great today to be joined by Ted Rubin. We've been online friends for a long time, and unfortunately, I didn't even make it down to see you, and I'm sorry about that. I've had a lot of problems the past few years, divorce, and you know, we've talked about this a lot before, right? So we're not going to focus on the negatives today, but we're going to focus on the positives, right? And what
I want to start out with one negative. I'm a little bit annoyed. Okay. I was counting on you calling me your mate, and you didn't, man. I love the way that sounds.
Okay, you're my mate.
There we go. Positive, baby. Let's do it.
So literally, we've been through the wars, yeah? Everyone who's got anywhere in life, and who's even people who haven't, right, they go through these struggles, yeah? And these struggles, they teach us things, don't they? And you know, if you look back over the last 40 years, yeah, and you, or maybe 35, right, Ted? I mean, you're not that old, yeah.
I will be 63 in December.
So you know, if we go back and we go back to the beginning of your career, right? What did you do when you your first job? What was your first job, and what did you learn from it?
Well, I gather when you say my career and my first job, you're referring to my first job after I graduated from college. So, you know,
okay.
I have lots of,
okay.
I mean, I've been working, I've had businesses since I was a kid. I made pins in a copper kiln and sold them when I was in fifth grade. I sold calculators in high school. I sold jewelry in college. But my first job out of college was in the investment industry. I became a stockbroker. But, you know, first, I just want to make a comment on what you were saying. You know, look, all of us have struggles. I don't care who you are, what you are, how good it is. You know, there's no let up in life. And there, nothing happens the way we plan. I think I was just talking about this with somebody on another podcast, or I was writing about it. I kind of lose track sometimes, especially now that I've been in the same place for so long because of the pandemic here in the States. And I was just talking about how nobody's plan is what they planned it to be. Nobody. Nobody, when they're like, I don't care, even if it's a plan they made when they were in college, there's no way they're 62 in my age and that plan went according to plan. Now, it might have, from a very larger perspective, you might have gotten married, you might have had kids, you had a career, but if everything you planned on happened, you're amongst a very, very minute minority.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then also, it's not only our own lives, our lives get affected by other people's lives. So even if your plan worked out, even if you went to college and became a doctor and started your own practice and you had this all planned out, there's no way, if you're a human being and you connect and engage with people and you have friends and family, that somebody wasn't affected. I like to say there's a quote that it's unattributed, but it's been around for many years, and it's one that I've embraced, that life is not waiting for the storm to pass. It's about learning to dance in the rain. Because if you wait for the storm to pass, it never will. Even if you don't wait for the storm to pass, but you wait for everything to be the way you planned it, you will never get there, mainly because just as human beings, even when we plan something, very often when we achieve that goal or get there, we then want more, or we want something different, or we want to extend on it. And we say, oh no, I can't do this right now because I'm not where I wanted to be before I wanted to get married, have kids, start a business, travel to Europe, get in my car, go through the channel and drive to Poland. You know, these things change dramatically all the time. So, you know, I've learned, and it's taken me a long time. I've always been an upbeat kind of person, and I'm very lucky. I've had great mentors, my father, my mom, my high school wrestling coach, who's like a second father to me, him and his wife are like second parents. They're still in my life. And other friends and mentors I've met along the way, who've, you know, allowed me to learn about, I call it attitude and perspective, which leads to mindset. And you look, I think we mentioned in the pre-recording that we were going to talk about some of the challenges in our life. Well, one that a lot of people know that I've gone through is fighting to keep my daughters in my life, which I'm still fighting. I fought it when they were young, and I won the court battle that enabled me to stay a part of their life, but they're 23 and 25 now. They're still alienated. Their mom still makes it very difficult for them to have a relationship with me.
Yeah, I know that feeling. I'm going through a similar thing right now, actually.
You know, I'm in a very different position than you are. My daughters are grown. They're not fully developed as women, but they're 23 and 25. They're not young, so I've had to manage this in a very different way now, because it doesn't end, or at least in my case, it didn't. I haven't spoken to my older daughter in 2.5 years. She cut me off when she graduated college before she started grad school. But the point of this is more about how you need to embrace that and you need to change your expectations. And it's something I've been working very hard on, so that you don't set yourself up for that negativity every day. And on top of that, it's not just negativity for yourself, but when you put that pressure on them, even as young adults at 23 and 25, it makes it not only harder for them, but that much more unlikely that at some point they'll come back. So I've worked very hard on changing my expectations, on making it easier for them. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned this dad won't quit. So what I've been talking about, and I've posted about it just very in a limited amount, I will be writing about it more, is that I'm trying to shift my mindset from the earlier stages of this dad won't quit and evolve it into the dad who will always love. So my daughters don't want a dad right now, and from what I've come to learn, not just via their actions, but from therapy and people I've been talking to, is they don't want a dad that won't quit. They just want to know that, or I want them to know that I'll always love them no matter what. Because the more, when they were younger, you've got to chase them to a point. You've got to say, I've got to see you, and I've got to get together, and I'm coming to every one of your events, because they're children. But now when they're adults, it has to be more about, I'm going to give you your space. I'm not going to be the needy dad anymore. Or at least that's what, this dad won't quit. It kind of transitioned into being needy because they were older. And now it's more about, I'm always here. I'll always love you. Trying to get into their mind that they don't have to worry, I'm not holding on to any anger, because that's what I'm afraid will stop them at one point in later in life when they choose to come back, if they feel that there's that mountain to climb or that anxiety to have about how I'll be feeling. So I'm just trying to represent myself different. And I think it goes into what we said we want to talk about today, is about having a positive attitude. We all have challenges in life, but you know, and by the way, there's nothing wrong with getting down when you're having a challenge. I just found out that my older daughter got engaged. I did not find out from her or my other daughter. I found out through third parties. And one of the things I talked about with my therapist was that, you know, because I try very hard to be removed, you know, and to step back and lower my expectations, but she says it's okay to be angry. For that, not angry at them, but angry at where it's transposed. But I think that has a lot of legs leading into what we've talked about, the pandemic and you know, in the United States having an orangutan for a president like Trump, and all the horrible things it's caused here, and how it's, I mean, Black Lives Matter is an important movement and always was, and I'm actually thankful to Trump, because he didn't cause all these things we have going on in this country with race relations. He brought them more to the surface because they were kind of hidden for a long time. And a lot of us thought we were past them when we weren't even close to past them. So for that, I thank him for opening our eyes to all the work that really needs to be done going forward. But again, it's a very negative situation here in the States right now. Countries have closed us out. We can't travel there. The pandemic is spreading and getting worse. We have an election coming up that he's doing everything he can to get in the way of, or to cause problems for, or to say that he might not even leave office. But at the same time, it's okay to be angry at that, but in general, I still have my positive outlook, and I'm there for other people, and I'm doing what I can, whether it's to fight that change or it's to help make the change in race relations in this country, and to open my eyes to my own white fragility and inability to understand how racist we all are without even realizing it.
Yeah.
And then to help as many people as I can. You know, like I say to people, when they give me a hard time and say, why are you saying this? You're never going to change someone's mind. I try to explain to them that I'm not really looking to change minds. I'm looking to rally like-minded people. I'm looking to take the guy who's on the sideline, who feels the way I do, thinking he really doesn't have to do anything, and make him understand there's so much more work to be done. I'm trying to get the person who's confused or needs someone to talk to and have that ability to talk to me or to somebody else, and to know that there's a lot of us rallying together to make the world a better place. So I think there's always room for a positive attitude. Again, I do want to put this out there because we are the fortunate people. Financially, we're all relatively okay. We don't have to worry about where our next meal is coming from. True. I'm talking about you and me and probably a lot of the people we know.
Yeah.
Because either they have it themselves or they have enough friends and family who have that they don't, like, you know, even at the worst of times, when I was $300,000 in debt back in 2010, spending seven figures to keep my daughters in my life, I never feared going hungry, even when my expenses were triple what I was earning. I knew there was places I could borrow it. I knew there were people that would help me. And that's an advantage that we have that I hope we can extend to a lot more people. Because, like, again, one of the things I've been kind of shouting about socially right now is that, yes, we're all worried about the economy and jobs, but we're not worried about how we're going to feed people. There are a lot of people in this country and probably all over the world that aren't going to be able to eat. Like, forget about the job, but keeping a roof over their heads and food in their mouth. And our country has done nothing to fund food banks. They're leaving that up to individuals.
Yeah.
And, you know, that those are just basic things. But again, my positive outlook is that we will pick up the slack. People like you, people like me, people like the ones we know. We won't allow people en masse. Obviously, some people it might happen to, but as a group, we're not going to let them go hungry, at least not here in this country, and probably not in places like the UK. Obviously, in third world countries, it might be a little more difficult, but we've got to stand up and help them too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, over at the church that I was going to in the UK, that I still feel a part of, they turned the church into a place where homeless people could go and get food every day. Like, I think they were doing three meals a day or something there, right? So there are these organizations that are kind of set up to do that. I think, you know, this is probably part of a much wider conversation of, you know, the minimum living wage conversation, and, you know, how to sustain, nice cap, how to sustain people's lives, right? I mean, it's a big conversation. And I mean, I was talking to a chap who's really into the economy today. We're going to do a podcast tomorrow for another show that I host. And that's all about that kind of thing, like future of jobs, future of work, minimum national living wage. I mean, apparently Spain have actually got that right now. I don't quite know a huge amount about that right now, but I'm learning. And I think it's a difficult one, right? When you're giving a whole load of money to people and they're actually getting more money for doing nothing than they are for going to work, it sort of says something. Yeah. I mean, that's been happening in America, but that's going to come to an end, isn't it? Because it's not sustainable, is it?
It's taken out of context. We're not paying people more money to stay home. We're just, because you can't handle this on a one-on-one basis. Okay, Nat, you only need 300 a week, so we're going to give you 300. And George, you need 600, so we're going to give you 600, because that's unmanageable. Especially when it's a crisis and you need to get it going in a very quick way. There's a set number that's just basically an average amount that a family or somebody needs to survive. So yes, there are some people getting paid more, but there is such a tiny fractional group of people that aren't going back to work because they're making more staying home.
Got it.
And also, what the concept in the beginning was, we didn't want people going to work who shouldn't be going to work because it would spread the virus. So I just think a lot of that's blown out of proportion. It's a lot of nonsense. Mm-hmm. And of course, it's because they're blowing it up. It's having a backlash where now we can't get a bill passed through to get people the kind of money they need to pay their bills they need. And by the way, nobody's getting rich on $600 a week.
No, they're not.
So stop with, you know, like all the nonsense.
But that's the propaganda, by the way.
In the United States of damn America, there shouldn't be a family that makes less than $30,000 a year.
Yeah, I agree. I
mean, geez, come on. If anybody has a problem with that, you know, I used to ride the train. into New York City from Long Island when I lived in Long Island. And I remember, you know, every once in a while, the MTA, which is the Metropolitan Transportation Association, would have to, authority, would have to raise ticket prices. And I rode the train with a fairly successful group of guys. They were like at that level where they weren't making enough to take a private car into the city, but these guys made, I don't think one of them made less than $250,000 a year. And they would bitch and moan all the time about the train slow, the train gets stuck, we hit pivots, it snows and we get stuck. But then they want to raise the train ticket by $30 a month in order to pay for these fixes. And all these guys would do is cry, oh my God, the hell with them, they're wasting the money. And then worse than that is I'd look at them and go, and by the way, at the time, I was not making as much as most of these guys.
Yeah.
And I was divorced, paying my ex and paying for my kids. And I'd look at them and go, guys, shut the fuck up. Right down a few seats away, who 30 bucks a month means that they won't have enough money to make their numbers for them. We should be paying for them. Each of us should pick one person on this train who can't afford it, and we should pay $60 extra a month. And they looked at me like, oh my God, I'm a goddamn communist. I'm a socialist. I'm like, no, you wanna know what the hell I am? I'm a freaking human being, and I care about others. And what the hell does 30 bucks a month mean to you? It's one less freaking Macallan scotch when you go to the bar after work every damn night.
Very good point.
You know what? We can make this. It's so easy. You guys have so much. You have so many gifts, and you know, just think about sharing a little bit.
Yeah, but then also there's the conversation around the corporations who are not paying taxes. Yeah, and that is a very, very serious situation, right? These people, if they're making X amount of profit within a locality, yeah, they should pay. They should pay, right?
That's another thing this guy will fix.
You know it, right? And do you know, Obama was actually promoting him the other day on his Facebook. I like that. I saw that, yeah? But I'm not, you know, this isn't a political conversation. It is, but it isn't, yeah? We didn't have an agenda. This is just a free conversation. And, you know, we've all been through struggles, Ted. I've been out of work, yeah. I remember being out of work. I've told this conversation this story a few times. I've been out of work and be good to people, exactly. But tell that to the ticket guy who gave me a ticket for parking on the pavement when I went into the job centre. And at that point, I was only getting £35.60 a week, yeah. This ticket was like, I think it was £60, yeah? And I came out of the job center and I was like, and I looked at my motorcycle and I was like, I just couldn't believe it, right? So like, I get it, yeah? Like I do understand, yeah? And it is really, really hard for some people, yeah? But the thing is that, you know, when you're in that place, And you really are stressed and you really do something. I mean, self-employed people and people who are maybe out of work, they're all learning new skills. All the people I speak to are learning new skills, yeah? In the past 6 months, I've learned all sorts of new things. I've learned how to do better storytelling, write better headlines, how to create graphics for video, how to edit short little videos, how to put imagery in things, how to mess around with images and stuff. And it's like, look, if you want to do something, you need to get off your ass and do the freaking work, yeah? And stop complaining, yeah? Because complaining just makes more things to complain about, yeah? Like, you know, before we got on here, I said, these mosquitoes, yeah, have been biting me. And you said, these mosquitoes have been biting me. And then we were like, we stopped that and we just got straight on with this conversation, yeah? Because it doesn't do any good. It doesn't help you. So I don't know, Ted. I think, you know, we've been looking at kind of, you've got the World Economic Forum saying, you know, this is like the big reset. That's basically what we're saying. And that's what they're saying, right? But the thing is that the big reset isn't going to do any good unless we cover the basic bills, unless we help people to eat and to have accommodation, internet access, access to education, right? Because you can learn pretty much anything you want online, yeah? And if we can, and obviously, you know, first aid and doctors and this kind of stuff. I mean, that's the major difference between UK and the US, right? Is we got the National Health Service, which is amazing. Yeah, we're very, very lucky to have that. But in the US, the poor people really get it badly, right? It's bad news. Yeah.
It's actually probably better for the really poor people than it is for the people somewhat in the middle. When I say middle, I don't mean middle income. I mean middle level of not having. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, people that are destitute get probably better care than people that are earning a living but just not making enough to pay for healthcare.
Right.
And look, this is way bigger a problem or a question that I can even feel that I have an ability to solve. I don't. I have to be one of those ones saying we have to solve it. We need smarter people to step up. We need people to really focus on it. Unfortunately, right now, and this gets back to that idea of being in the moment, is we're in a moment with this worldwide pandemic, and we are in it all over the world. It's not just a localized thing. And in today's world, even if one country solves it, if others don't, it's going to remain. And that's why it's unfortunate there's not a lot more going on, and why it's unfortunate that the United States of America, the wealthiest country in the world, is doing such a poor job. And even if we were inclined to share, which with our current administration we're not, we don't have anything to share right now because we're worse off than anybody. And you know, but getting so I think right now we need to solve the immediate problems. But then again, if you just, and I think you mentioned this earlier, if you just solve an immediate problem and don't look out longer term with a positive perspective of how can we make this better, then you're going to end up back where you are at some point. And like one of the things I say about Black Lives Matter is I hope this time it never goes away. Like it can't, because by the way, this isn't going to change in a year or a month or with an election. This is going to take generations to change because it's a mindset of the way we're brought up and the way we're taught. And that can, even if we were to all change right now, we still have to wait till a new generation comes in to grow up with that new mindset. Because guys like you and I are like, I am, you know, before I really started educating myself about this, you know, I would have been one of those guys that I'm not racist. I got a lot of black friends. I work with black people. I have nothing there. You know, everyone's equal. We all have the same rights. I want everyone. It's all about good people and not good people.
Yeah.
But now I've come to recognize that that's really not true, because I've taken a real good look at myself, the way I react when somebody walks by who to me looks a little bit sketchy, or the first thing I think of in my mind when I hear somebody was shot. Now, that doesn't mean I really believe it was somebody of color, but my mind reacts in an automatic way for the way I've been trained my whole life. And that's going to be hard to change. So my hope, and this goes towards the pandemic as well, is that we will learn from this, but continue that it's just like really good companies. We've all studied really good companies, right? That's something that's easy. Well, look at a company that, you know, look at IBM, how they've reinvented themselves over and over. And there are a lot of companies like them. DEC was around, they disappeared. Unisys basically, you know, disappeared, isn't what it was. But companies that really kept growing and bettering themselves, we need to do that as countries and as the world. We need to get on this Black Lives Matter thing and keep at it until the generational changes happen where people really become better people. The pandemic, let's just say, we actually really solve this thing in mm-hmm. the next 6 to 8 months. Yeah. And I can't imagine it being any sooner than that. The best case is we get a vaccine that's viable and we figure out treatments that work, okay? But it's not going away, and there are going to be new ones like this. It's a different world, different things are growing. I am not educated enough in biology to explain it or truly understand it, but I am smart enough and open-minded enough to know that things have changed and they're not going back. Which means if we just solve this thing, go, okay, mask off, let's go out, do this, don't wash your hands, who cares? We're gonna be fucked again.
So we
need to evolve and learn that we need to be more careful with our sanitation, with our cleanliness, with the things we do, with the way we associate with people, where how we protect ourselves, what happens next time there's an alert that there's a disease somewhere in the world, what is the automatic protocols that go into place in every country in the world to protect their citizens. if we don't learn from that and move on with a positive attitude of we can make it better in the future, and then you know, same thing, whether it's poverty we're talking about or look at infrastructure. The United States was new. We were like, we were a new country. Everything was built new. And for years, we led the world. Now our transportation sucks, our roads suck. Why? Because they were good. It's almost like the homeowner who fixes everything and then says, I already fixed it. I don't want to fix it again. No, it's a constant struggle. And the same thing goes for us as humans. What I've learned, or I shouldn't say learned, I think I knew it, but what I've had more time to exercise during this time, because I'm not traveling the way I was. I'm still working, thank God, and I'm very involved in a couple of startups. But what I've had more time for is to educate myself. I have a stack of books, and I actually get upset if I go a day or two and I don't make progress along that stack of books, even though I do have to give myself a break and go, hey, you'll do it tomorrow. It didn't have to happen today. I always have too high expectations for myself. Same thing for ourselves. We have to give ourselves a break and realize you're not going to accomplish that whole checklist of what you made for that day. You got to give yourself a break and realize, don't say I'm going to run a marathon and I'm going to start running 5 miles a day tomorrow. Say I want to run a marathon. That's my long-term goal. But tomorrow I'm going to run a quarter mile. Or like what I've learned to do with a lot of my goals when it comes to working out is instead of saying I'm going to work out an hour, or I'm going to run 5 miles, I go, I'm going to run every day. Or I'm going to bike ride every day, because that means if I ride for a minute, I've accomplished my goal and I can feel good.
Yeah. Bad.
But I think that we have to learn from this that we all require constant education. And we're in a world, like you mentioned earlier, where we all got these devices right in front of us where we can learn. I mean, every minute, it amazes me when I'm sitting at back in the day when I was sitting in a cocktail hour or at an event or emceeing an event or keynoting, and two people started arguing about something as simple as how many miles it is to the moon. And I'm like, dude, fucking Google. Like, why are you fighting? Like, they're arguing with each other. This is not that, there are certain things you can't just look up that requires opinions, but we can all be educated at every moment. And like, I've been reading more books and what bothers me is I haven't read as much as I want to read or learn.
Yeah, but then there becomes a saturation point where you need to almost just say, okay, I've learned quite a lot. I need to just get on with it. Use those skills. I mean, I'm not talking about you.
What I mean is, it doesn't have to be every day. You don't have to improve yourself every minute. And yes, I think you make a great point. Whether you're working out or you're studying or learning in some format or another, it's always nice to sit back and go, okay, now I've got to take it all and assimilate it and make sure that I start doing some of those things and I learn some of those things and they get added to my repertoire. And you know, who knows, it could be a day, it could be an hour, it could be 10 years before you delve back in. That's something you have to judge for yourself. But yeah. I the point I'm making is I think that all of these things, we think too much in starts, beginnings and ends instead of continuation.
I agree. You know, it's like kids at school, they go and learn something for a month and then they think they know all about it. It's like, look, you don't know anything. You've learned how to pass a test. You've learned how some basic information, yeah? Okay. It's like, well, you know, 20 years later when you've been studying that skill, martial art, whatever, right? 5 years, 10 years, 30 years, yeah? You might wake up one day and know something about it, right? But I think these things can be so in depth that it's like, well, just kind of working out where you are now, where you want to get to, and saying, well, okay, so a lot of this is going to change along the way. So what can I learn now, which is going to help me to build these new skills so that, you know, in 6 months, a year, 2 years, maybe I can start a company. Maybe I can get a new job or
whatever. I think the biggest skill we fail to teach our children in the school and our employees, and of course, I'm generalizing because there are some schools and some kids and some coaches and some things that teach us, is I used to say to my daughters when they were younger, is that you're learning how to learn. Like, I'm not worried about the grade. I'm not worried about the accomplishment, other than you're learning how to learn, because that's a skill you take with you the rest of your life. And by the way, it's a physical thing too. Like in sports, you might not be good, but you're learning how to teach your body how to do something. And that doesn't mean you become a world-class athlete or, you know, I want to jump rope more and I just can't get down. I want to jump rope like a boxer.
It's going to take you 6 months to learn how to jump rope.
I've already tried. I mean, it's
you can do it. What hurts though is when you've what sort of rope do you have? Have you got like the leather one?
I've gone through everything.
But that's try the leather rope, yeah? And when it hits your feet, yeah, right? Yeah, it gets really frustrating, yeah? But after 6 months, 9 months, yeah, you start and then it becomes enjoyable. But
that's not the point I'm making, Nat. So let me finish my point. And then we can get to yours.
I don't have a point.
No, but you do. You're talking about perseverance, which is very
important. I am.
That's great. The point I'm making is that I might never get good at it, but I'm teaching myself how to learn new things. I'm teaching myself to try something and understand that I might never be great at it, but I've still learned a new skill. And too many people give up because they're like, oh, I'm not as good as I want to be. And look, I'm no different than anybody. There's a lot of things I haven't done in my life because I didn't want to look funny or I didn't want to go out there and make a fool out of myself, or I needed to try to learn a little bit on my own before I got out there. And one of the recent things I did without any of that, and it actually ended because of the pandemic, is I took up jujitsu.
Back I know. In January. It's brilliant. And it's such a shame because I think it's fantastic to take that up.
But I was kind of stalling and I got in touch with a really great owner of a local dojo and he's my age and he owns the place. And he's like, you know, no problem. You can come down and you should come down and meet us. And I'd love to talk to you. And I said, I wanted private lessons because I wanted to learn in my own little space, with anybody around.
Yeah.
And he's like, we can work that out, but come down. I think you might come see a class. Like it's all guys, women, all different ages. We've got beginners. And he said to me, jiu-jitsu is the kind of thing where everybody's trying to teach everybody. So you'll never be made to feel, even by guys way above you. And it was an effort for me to make that effort. And I was lucky. I found someone who brought me in. And then I met my they call them coaches in jiu-jitsu. Mm-hmm. And I met my coach. And then he worked with me a little bit privately just because I wanted to get a little bit more up to speed. And then, of course, unfortunately, it ended. They reopened, but I have no interest in being this close to somebody spitting in their fucking neck, you know, until this passes. So I had to give that up fully. But again, what I was just trying to say is that I got in and it was a good realization for me that I didn't have to achieve the way I used to. I didn't have to be as good as someone else. It was just something I was able to participate in. And I was, again, retraining my body to learn something new.
Super. What a super attitude. So basically, it's about just accepting the fact that you're just enjoying the process of learning and you learn at your own pace, right? Like,
sometimes that's every time. Like, I haven't gotten over that fear. There are things I hesitate doing but each time it happens, I then put it into an intellectual point and say, okay, I'm holding back. I'm a little worried about this. Sometimes I do it. Sometimes I don't. I back off and I don't do what I would have liked to have done for whatever reason. But, you know, I have a boat outside, as you've probably seen some of my posts. And I hadn't had a boat in years and years, and I'm kind of new to it. And I don't like to dock when there's a lot of people around and, you know, everybody's looking at me and I've got to pull in because I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. So little by little, I've got to overcome that, you know. And first I started taking it out myself and docking at my own dock by myself. And then I finally went and took it for gas, you know, but the beauty of there is there's almost no one around. You throw your rope to the guy on the dock and he just helps you in. Then all of a sudden I get to a restaurant and it's packed in this one little spot and the guy's waving to me and I'm like, nah, I'm out.
I can appreciate that because my buddy's got a yacht and he's like, just get out, just take the rope and go and chuck it on. And seriously, you've got to be so careful because you can really look like an idiot or get injured or fall in the water.
Even in my little 18-foot boat, yes.
Awful. You can drop a rope in the water. You could just look like a complete douche, right?
It's exactly.
That's my biggest fear. Yeah. One of my biggest fears, but I've started lots of different martial arts. Yeah. And you know, when you go to the class, like you get to the class And like, there's always this feeling in your heart. Yeah. Like, it's kind of like a worry. You're like, you know, I'm going to look like an idiot. Like, I can't handle it. Like, there's too much attitude here, or, you know, there's all sorts of these reasons that we give ourselves. And it's just like, yep. Look, you just got to get on with it. Yeah. I've been to all sorts of classes. Like, I used to do Thai boxing. I've done like, some Japanese jiu-jitsu. It's fantastic. But more about, you know, like snapping the arm and like stamping on the ankle and like killing them. I mean, it's battlefield stuff, right? Whereas the Brazilian jiu-jitsu is fantastic, but very technical. I found it very, very hard, actually.
And it's a great workout. Was one of the things I love the most about it. Yeah. I got out of a class and I was done.
Yeah. Like, yeah. It's brilliant. You'll get back to that though when you're ready. I think I'm gonna take up Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu when I get a chance. I've been dabbling martial arts a long time,
Let's talk when there's a vaccine.
Yes. Well, I think here where I'm at the moment in Poland, I mean, they've got, you know, not that many cases. But the problem is that then people were lured into a false sense of security. So then they went on holiday and then it got busy and no one wore masks. And it's all about wearing a mask. I mean, at the end of the day, have some respect for people. Just wear a mask, you know, have a distance. Is it really that complicated? Is it really that hard?
And is it so important to go out for drinks and to dinner? Like, you know, I mean, I got to tell you, one of my pet peeves is I know a lot of these guys and people that for years have bragged to me how much they love their homes and they've got this gorgeous house and they did this. And now we're all bitching and moaning about having to be in it. Like, come on.
Yeah, but why is that though? Is it because they're not on their own in their house?
No, I know, you know, that's not what I'm talking. I mean, the point I'm making is that people are just so anxious to go out, like to go out. Yeah. And I get it. Look, you know, I'm here by myself right now. And it, you know, it's not
lonely.
Easy all
it's
the
lonely,
time.
Yeah.
And it's a little lonely. And luckily, I mean, I have some people in the building, but I keep my distance. And, but we're not talking about giving up that much. If everybody would just do it. For like, we're not talking about there won't be a vaccine forever, and we can stem the thing. There just needs to be a little sacrifice, and it's just amazing to me that people just haven't. It's about mindset. World War II, everybody chipped in, everybody did what they had to do. People took jobs, they built factories, they helped people, they raised money. Why they can't look at it this? But again, I do know why they can't, because we don't have leadership that's leading us in that direction. And that's why other countries have been so much more successful than us, because they've got better leadership, number one, and they have a mindset that they believe in their leaders and they follow them. And they don't have this stupid American mindset of nobody can tell me what to do.
Yeah, but you see, that's not just the Americans. Yeah, like I was listening to this mayor, this Italian mayor, about 3 months ago, and this was after Italy just got completely,
right,
you know, ravaged by this thing. Yeah, and he said, look, if we'd have just turned around and said to everyone, sorry, you're not allowed out, we're shutting everything down, they would have had riots and gone crazy. And I think actually in the UK, that's probably the reason that we've adopted the certain style that we have. I'm not saying we've done an amazing job, but what I am saying is that it could have been a whole lot worse. And I think that we're very similar in our mindset. Like, we just don't like being told what to do, really, you know? Yeah. So finishing up, right? To the listeners, what do you think? Just you got to just go through it, learn what you can, try and be positive. What's the, you know, you can't be positive every day, right?
Oh, look, if you think I'm positive every day, and if you think I don't wake up depressed a lot of mornings, or you think that I don't have challenges, and I try to share those things, you know, I don't just post good things. I post my challenges. I post my ups and downs. I post what's going on with my daughters. But share it, have open conversations about it. But in the end, just recognize that, you know, there's that age old expression, this too shall pass. And we need to start thinking of or looking at what we can get that's positive out of this. There's a lot of silver linings in this whole pandemic thing. People have gotten closer to their families. I know a lot of men and women who have had babies, and they've gotten to stay home with them completely. Like, you know, I have a buddy of mine who's a dad for the third time, but he had two grown daughters. He got remarried. And when his daughters were growing up, he was at work every day. He wasn't with them. Now he's been home almost for the whole first year of his daughter's life. And it's remarkable. He's working from there. He's got a great job. He's his SVP of marketing for a big company. But meanwhile, he wakes up every day. He's with his daughter. He's watching her grow up. And I think this also goes for, you know, a lot of parents are stressed about teaching their kids, but I think a lot of parents are finally learning a little bit more about their kids' educations and understanding what it takes for them to learn and seeing how they're being taught. So many parents were so removed from that. It was like, get the kids off the school, do your thing, bring home your grades, you're fine, bye, see you later. And now all of a sudden they're recognizing how hard our teachers work and how hard a job it is to educate kids and what it's like to have them around all the time. So I just think there's so much we can learn from it. Companies have finally moved into the digital age. I mean, we should have been using Zoom and working remotely for years.
Yeah.
Technology has been available for a long time. There's no reason for a lot of these companies to have all these massive offices they have. And they're learning. First, they were afraid to do it and you have to have people come in and I can't let them work from home. They won't get any work done. There, a lot of companies are discovering that employees are way more effective when they don't have to commute, when they're not in the office wasting time at water coolers, going out to 3-hour lunches, when they're actually finding that important time to engage with their coworkers and their colleagues on Zooms, on calls where it's important and building stronger relationships. I have to tell you, at Fotify, we're never going to go back to our office. It's not only is it expensive, but we've become way more effective. Our team has gotten closer. Because we have, you know, we don't fool ourselves into thinking we're building those relationships at the office when we really weren't, because now we really are. And now we're concerned. And every call starts out with how are things by you and how are you doing and how are your kids? Whereas those conversations were kind of remote and didn't happen. So I think, you know, there's going to be a lot of changes in that respect. I think there's going to be a lot of changes with education. A lot of students are learning they can learn remotely, especially in college age students. Think of how much more cost effective universities are going to be when they don't have to have all the facilities for all the students. Think about how many more students we can educate. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm all about socializing. I think one of the most important things about college is kids learning to live on their own and get along with people and be a part of a community. So I'm not saying that should go away, but that isn't necessarily for everybody. And now we're getting the tools and wrapping our arms around different ways and how quickly we can adapt. Look how quickly we adapted to this.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm completely. When I went to full cash in the market the end of February, I'm sorry now I didn't put it all into Zoom. I mean, I should have seen that.
I've spoken to Mike Tobin about that. He said the same thing. Yeah, it made me laugh. But I think Google's going to catch up with that, because scheduling a Zoom call is not that easy. Yeah, compared to scheduling a Google call, it's not that easy. Yeah. However. It depends on the purpose, but it's the purpose.
Now that the market is there at such scale, there'll be a lot of different opportunities.
Yeah. Well, I think there's opportunities everywhere. Yeah. I think retrofitting office buildings, I think prices of houses should be coming down. I think, you know, no one should be homeless. Everyone should have a place to live. Yeah. And like, you can't tell me you need all these big buildings and big shopping centers anymore. No one goes out. What do they need to buy the latest stuff for? They don't go out anymore. Like it's irrelevant.
It's funny you say that. I was just looking in my closet and I'm like, I haven't worn any of this shit in like 6 months now. I wear t-shirts and shorts. That's it. I went to the doctor. I put off some doctor's appointments because of what was going on. And finally, I just couldn't put it off anymore, just to make sure that, you know, again, I'm turning 63. There are things I got to get checked. But I put on a pair of jeans to go. And I'm like, oh my God, I haven't worn jeans in months. Remember, I'm here in Florida and it's warm. Yeah. But like, I have like, and then I get all these ads trying to sell me new clothes. I'm like, why would I want to buy more clothes?
Yeah, well, that's the biggest thing. I mean, we could talk forever about all these things. Yeah. And, you know, I think it's been really lovely that you shared some time with me, Ted.
It's always fun sharing time with you.
It's super, absolutely super. And, you know, I think whoever's going through whatever, they need to just hang in there. And it, like you said, yeah, this too shall pass, right? Like that's the you know, the kind of lesson, really. And I was listening to a show the other day with Oprah and this bishop, yeah. And he said something about there is, did he say? I've forgotten what on earth he said now, but it was basically just something about suffering. Oh, that was it. He said, there's dignity in suffering is what he said. And that resonated with me quite a lot. I thought that was very, very interesting.
There's certainly learning in suffering. So I just hope that we take something away from this. And like I said, that we just don't stop, that we learn that these things have to go on a regular basis.
Yeah.
But thank you for the conversation. I enjoyed it.
Absolutely brilliant. And I'm going to make this live for Friday. You've been very kind. And so if people want to find Photify, they can go and find it. If they want to find you, you're Ted Rubin, they can check you out, right?
All very simple. Photify.com, TedRubin.com, Google Ted Rubin. Basically, the first 14 pages are me. I'm happy to talk to anybody. And remember, everybody, relationships are like muscle tissue. The more you engage them, the stronger and more valuable they become.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I've got my American passport, Ted. So, you know, I can, whenever I want, I can get over there.
I've got a guest room waiting for you.
I know. You said this to me 4 years ago and I was just useless. I'm sorry, but I'm recovering. Yeah.
Okay.
Classic.
Thanks for listening to Positive Personal Power. Do subscribe via your favorite podcasting app and please leave us a 5-star review. Or sign up on our website, positivepersonalpower.net, for weekly emails and updates, and do share our episodes with your friends and on social media. Feel free to reach out anytime.